Okay, Ms. Jones, are we now on the record?
We are now on the record, yes.
All right, thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm Susan Drummond, Kitsap County Hearing Examiner. It is August 24, 2026, Monday, 10:30 a.m. We are here for the CPAS staff appeal for the Wood Spring Suites Hotel. I'll go through a few opening remarks, but let me have the parties introduce themselves first. Maybe we'll start with the county.
Good morning, all. This is Neil Wachter, Senior Deputy Prosecuting Attorney with the Kitsap County Prosecutor's Office on behalf of the issuing party, Kitsap County.
Good morning, Mr. Wachter. And then I guess for the on the appellant side, and I know there's kind of two sets, but if you all could introduce yourselves.
Okay. Sure. Duncan Green representing the appellants, Pacific Northwest Title, Cavalon Place, and Kitsap Credit Union. And I've got my associate, Isaac Patterson, here with me.
Good morning to you both.
My name is Chris Ryland, and I am President and CEO of Pacific Northwest Title and Managing Member of Cavalon Place, LLC.
Okay. Good morning, Ms. Ryland, and that's R-E-I-L-A-N-D.
R-I-E.
R-I-E. Okay. All right. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I'm Kelly Letexier. I'm CEO Vice President of Corporate Initiatives for Kitsap Credit Union.
Okay. And could you spell your last name?
Sure. L-E, capital T-E-X-I-E-R.
All right. Good morning to you both. And then is there anyone online that needs to introduce themselves?
Yes. Good morning, Ms. Examiner. I'm David Karpman here on behalf of the applicant, Park Silver Development, along with my partner, Jessica Rowe.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Karpman and Ms. Rowe. And Rowe, R-O-W-E, right?
R-O-E.
R-O-E. Okay. Sorry about that. Right. Okay. Good morning to you both. And then is anyone else online?
Yes. Good morning. I'm Megan Raymond from Davis Wright Tremaine here on behalf of CPI AHP Silverdale MOB owner. We are going to refer to our client as Anchor Health throughout the presentation just for awareness. And my colleagues, Clayton Graham and Ken Nelson, are also online.
Okay. Good morning to all of you. And I guess I should clarify, because there are quite a number of appellants. It's really grouped into kind of two groups. In terms of how should I refer to, is there any a preference? I mean, we should probably have a uniform reference so it's kind of clear into which appellate groups. Do parties have thoughts on that?
I would just say from our perspective, sorry to cut you off. We only represent Anchor Health, which owns one of the buildings, the Cavalon One building. Mm-hmm. I think Mr. Green and Mr. Patterson represent the rest. So okay. If that distinction is helpful.
I guess in terms of how the parties will be presenting today, because I assume you all have coordinated a bit. So, or maybe I just let you all define yourselves as we proceed.
Well, building on what we just heard, mm-hmm. It might make sense to, in terms of coverage, to refer to these appellants as the primary appellants and Anchor Health just as Anchor Health.
Okay.
That's also how we've been coordinating with Anchor Health. That's how we've sort of structured our presentation. We're going to sort of take the lead.
Okay.
And they will build on our questioning.
Okay, that sounds good. If any further clarification is needed, please speak up. Anyone else online who needs to introduce themselves? Okay. All right, well, a few introductory remarks, and then we'll turn to the appellants for their presentation. As you all know, this, of course, is a quasi-judicial proceeding, somewhat formal. When you testify, I swear you in. I formally admit exhibits, and I will turn to the exhibits in just a second. There are is before me appeals of the SEPA and SDAP determination for the hotel, the burden of proof on the SIPA is absent clear error that the appellants must demonstrate. The determination is upheld, and on the SDAP, the appellants must demonstrate that it was erroneously issued and, you know, inconsistent with code. There was a jurisdictional motion earlier on the appeals. I felt that it was premature, so it did not grant it, but of course that was without prejudice. So if there are objections as we proceed on whether evidence is being presented that goes to matters that are outside my jurisdiction, then I would expect the parties to raise those. So in terms of exhibits, there's a bit of them. let me just go, I want to make sure I've got everything. So there's the, what is, has been referred to as the foundational exhibits, F1 through F53. There are the appellant exhibits, A1 through A5. There are the applicant exhibits, B1 through B15, and then the county exhibits, C1 through 64. Do I have everything?
I believe.
There was an additional appellant.
Oh, I'm sorry, A6. Sorry, yeah. I typed this before that came in. So yes, thank you for that. Did I miss anything else? Okay, question for the parties. Sometimes it's more efficient to just admit all of the exhibits up front. Do you all want to do that today?
I was going to suggest that as
okay.
Stipulate as to admissibility, authenticity, you reserve the right to argue about.
Right, yeah, no, the point doesn't mean the parties agree on, you know, the facts or anything, but just in terms of rules on admission, a little more lenient here in examiner settings. So there's no objections to doing that today, is that correct?
Ms. Examiner, I guess for the applicant, I suppose object, but I was thinking more of just suggesting that that we have no objection to admitting all of the exhibits other than the county exhibits C1 through C64 just at this juncture, because there's so many of them and because they relate to a different process. We think it would make sense to discuss those as they may come up during the hearing, but for the other exhibits, the foundational record, and the appellants and applicants exhibits, we would have no objection to admitting all of those up front.
Okay. And Mr. Wachter, do you have a response on that?
I think Mr. Cartman's characterization is fair. The county's records are primarily historical and were part of the permitting that took place in leading up to 2004 and the hearing examiner decision that was sort of the origin decision.
This sort of set the stage for
right
what came next.
Right. So I expect there may be moments as the testimony goes along where I may ask for all or part of the county's exhibits to be admitted, but I can certainly hold off for now. And again, I appreciate the reservation on this one.
Okay. So I'll hold on admitting C1 through 64. Don't let me forget to address that before the hearing concludes. Certainly, sometimes it is helpful to have some of the background documents, and even if not directly relevant to the issues, often it does help in terms of interpreting present issues. But I will reserve ruling on C1 through C64 at this time, but otherwise the remaining, so F1 through F53, A1 through A6, and B1 through B15, those are all admitted. In terms of the order of presentation, so on, this is an appeal, so typically the appellants would present their case first. If you all wish to make a brief opening argument beforehand, that's fine, but then we would go directly into witness testimony, and then the applicant and the department would present, and I defer to you all in terms of what order you wish to proceed following that. And as with the appellants, so you all may make it brief opening statement when you open your case or at the outset too, either way is fine. So any questions on the order there?
I have housekeeping, but I can hold.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
First of all, would you have any objection to, I'll just speak for myself, removing a sport coat as this is
No, your comfort is paramount. So this room is small, so it'll be warm in here. So no, so yeah, if you'll need to Yeah, to function, then that's fine.
I'm already regretting this one. So.
Yeah, I'll do what I can to keep my suit jacket on, but feel that does, yeah, no that problem. In no way precludes you.
And then the second matter is I need to acknowledge a reality that I only became aware of this morning regarding the county's lead witness on this.
Oh, right. Is this Mr. Smith?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What is his availability? Because I know there, I saw there was something on that, and I thought it was maybe today that he's not available. I can't remember now.
Okay. I've been led to believe that Mr. Smith is unavailable tomorrow, but that he could be with us today and Wednesday. Apparently, his family situation is emergent and has not gotten better. He is away from the office today, unavailable by any means. He's unavailable tomorrow. We expect he can be available on Wednesday. I had alerted the parties, and everyone graciously agreed that Mr. Smith could get his testimony done today so that the whole thing could keep going at best efficiency. And unfortunately, I can't deliver him today.
Okay.
He has a supervisor, Darren Gurney, who is, I believe, is with us in the Zoom. Mr. Gurney, he can't frankly be a substitute. He can speak in real generalities, and I may ask him to testify in as we go along. But in terms of this today's proceedings, I'm hoping it doesn't throw everyone off completely and that we can still get.
Okay. Yeah, we'll proceed with the witnesses as they are available. And then with Mr. Smith, sounds like possibly Wednesday, but if not, we'll figure it out. So I don't know if the other parties have comments on that at this time.
We appreciated the heads up this morning, and we'll all do what we can.
Okay. All right. So yeah, we'll just sort it as kind of news. I understand. These situations do arise. Let's see. Oh, I did want to mention, so we are right now in Zoom and in person, kind of both. And I at the pre-hearing conference, I said, you know, it was kind of up to the parties on that. I'll make a call on whether I'm in person. I figured the first day it would be most helpful for me to be in person. I may be as well tomorrow. We'll just see how things go today. But I get for anyone who is online, and if you for everyone in the hearing room as well, if at any point you cannot hear another party, please immediately speak up, raise your hand. If I'm not see, like, I don't know if you can, you know, that little the emoji hand, raise that. Or if I can actually, I think, see all of you right now. So this hand waving might work. Well, some of you have blank, dark screens, but if they're on, I could, yeah, there we go. Mr. Cartman just raised his hand. So I saw that. So, and you can use the chat feature to contact the clerk, Ms. Jones, only on procedural issues. So don't submit anything you would like me to review that way. There's retention issues, and I can't see it anyway from here. So, but yeah, on technical issues for those of you online, you may certainly contact Ms. Jones. So let's see. I did mention at the pre-hearing conference that if you all could settle it, that was encouraged. And of course, you all can settle it up to the point that I issue a decision. So if at any point in the hearing, there seems like there's an opportunity, you know, just a heads up on that. So that is encouraged if that proves feasible. And then my decision comes out 10 business days from whenever the record on this closes. So I think that's really all that I wanted to state up front. Does anyone have any procedural questions? Yes, Mr. Cartman.
Ms. Examiner, the parties discussed closing arguments a bit by email. As I understand where we landed, the appellants and the applicant would prefer written closings, and Mr. Wachter would prefer an oral closing. The appellants and applicant also had some disagreement as to what exactly the written closings would look like. I was wondering if perhaps we could just settle the question of written versus oral now, so we know if we need to be preparing an oral closing during the hearing, and then perhaps talk more about the logistics of that at the end.
Okay. And so, Mr. Walker, you prefer, and you can split it up. It's not like everybody has to do the same thing too. So, but Mr. Walker, but maybe let me hear from you first.
Well, if everyone else is doing written, I certainly would do a written closing. Speaking as, I'll say, an older trial attorney, I generally love being able to finish up and tie them up in a bow and not have another brief hanging over me after I leave a hearing. But I appreciate not everyone holds that view.
Okay.
That's all.
And it's true. So the other parties would prefer to have it written at the... Okay.
That's right.
I get, you know, since it's kind of a majority on that, I'm going to, and it can, you know, I often do find written closing arguments helpful. Typically, if it's, you know, if there's some legal issues, I often sometimes will defer to having the written, and I suspect that will be the case here. Just because there's been a question, just the parties wanted kind of heads up on that for preparation purposes. I guess I'd incline to go ahead and have written closing arguments. So we'll do it that way. In terms of kind of length and deadline and all that, why don't we wait till the end of the hearing to kind of set the parameters? And usually there's consensus on those points, but it's always good to give parties a deadline and sometimes a page limit. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Any other procedural questions?
I'm just curious if you had a sense of the schedule for today when
typically
wrap up and whether there's...
I forgot to mention that. Yeah. So this was a little odd and we didn't have the other hearing room. So we start. I think Ms. Jones, you had indicated maybe a lunch around one might, just because we have to, there's a little bit of setup that might have to happen on in the other hearing room.
Probably between at some point between 12:30 to 1:30, have some sort of lunch hour or lunch half an hour. And then if anyone who is here physically needs to move their cars,
I know there's that because there's a 2-hour time frame. Tickets, as I understand, are $20. Well, I got one last week, so they were $20.
and they are out. They are on their ticket.
Yeah. So it's a 2-hour. Yeah. There is parking. I know there's parking if you drive a couple blocks that way. That's longer than 2 hours. So there are. And Ms. Jones is familiar with where you can go to. So similar experience. And then we may. It's possible. I don't know if we'll need a break before then. If anyone, sometimes I tend to just go drive through, so I tend to forget sometimes to take breaks. So if anyone in the hearing online or in the hearing room needs a break for whatever reason, please speak up and we'll take, a 15-minute or, whatever is appropriate. The restrooms, I should say, are right outside for those of you who are here in person. They're right over there and there's drinking fountain and all that. So, and then in terms of, I never go past 5. If we can get done a little bit before then, that's great from my schedule purposes, but and it depends a little bit on kind of what makes sense from a witness standpoint. So definitely I ask that there's quite a number of witnesses and typically not all witnesses are called in most hearings, certainly if testimony can be, efficient and on point and that would be helpful in terms of the proceeding efficiency.
And then Ms. Raymond also has her hand raised. Oh,
yes. Thank you. Ms. Raymond?
Thank you. Yeah, I was practicing my hand emoji. but this is a real question. Given the hybrid format, and I know there are going to be a number of witnesses who will be hybrid as well, do you have a preference for calling witnesses' attention to exhibits? We are... for some of our questions, we're happy to pull up those exhibits. We have some excerpts in a deck, if that's helpful, or I don't know if Ms. Jones typically would put those on screen, or it would just be helpful to have some guidance as to your preference as to show.
So I have all of the exhibits on my laptop here, so I've downloaded, on the desktop, so I can pull them up as they're referenced. But I guess in general, I defer to the parties on that. So if there's something they really want to pull up on the screen, that's fine. But it's certainly there's no need to do so. I'm taking notes, so I'm tracking with what exhibits being referred to during the testimony. So I myself do not have a particular preference, so I leave that up to the parties.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions? Okay. All right. Well, I think that's that. So we'll turn to the appellants. Were you all going to make a brief opening statement or go directly to witness testimony? Right. Neither is fine.
I think we'll waive our opening statement.
Okay.
Is the county planning to do a background presentation before we get into our
Did the county want to do that? I know some jurisdictions, it is not unusual for the jurisdiction to provide a background presentation, like a PowerPoint or something like that. I didn't know if, Mr. Wachter, you wanted to do that or have staff do that today.
Darren Gurney is prepared to deliver a brief statement. It would not include a PowerPoint.
Yeah, that's
it
fine.
Would simply be a 5-minute or less overview kind of statement.
Okay.
If that would be of use to you.
Have a strong preference. Do the parties have a strong preference either way on that? Sounds like, well, you know, for efficiency, why don't we just go directly into appellant testimony? Certainly... I'm familiar with kind of the SDEP-CEPA sort of setup here. Obviously, you know, there are fact-specific issues but we'll get into that. So, yeah. I think we'll go just for efficiency. We'll go directly since there's not strong opinions.
We don't want to step on anybody's toes.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah. Okay. So, your first witness.
Okay. I'm going to hand it over to Mr. Patterson to get us started.
Okay. Mr. Patterson, who is going to be the first witness today?
Our first witness today is going to be Stephanie Herbstein. She will be
on the screen momentarily.
Okay.
Testifying remotely as well.
Okay. All right. And I think I've got the spelling on that here with the F instead of the PH and then Herbst, Herbstein, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Ms. Herbstein, are you with us?
Yes.
Okay, good morning. If you can state your name for the record.
Stephanie Herbstein.
And you swear affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Patterson, you may proceed with your questions.
Good morning, Ms. Herbstein.
Good morning.
Could you please, for the record, state your name and professional position?
Stephanie Herbstein, principal with Transpo Group.
Is your resume accurately reflected in Exhibit 1A1?
Yes.
Could you briefly describe your education, professional licenses, and certifications?
I have a Bachelor's of Science in Civil Engineering with the University of New Hampshire. I have a Master's of Science in Civil Engineering with a focus in transportation from the University of California, Berkeley. I'm a registered professional engineer in the state of Washington, and I'm also a professional traffic operations engineer certification.
What type of parking access and circulation analyses do you regularly perform for commercial and mixed-use development?
Parking demand analysis, we look at both shared parking, depending on the use, and also site-specific parcel parking demands. We review access and operations needs, evaluate multimodal conditions for pedestrians, bikes, vehicles on site.
And were you retained to evaluate the proposed WoodSpring Suites project in the Highlands Business Park?
Yes.
Did the fact that you were hired by the appellants affect your conclusions about the project and its effects on traffic, parking, and internal circulation?
No.
What specifically were you asked to evaluate?
We were asked to evaluate the existing parking conditions as well as parking conditions when the site would be fully occupied and when the proposed hotel would be built. We were also asked to evaluate site access and circulation operations under the existing conditions and then with the proposed hotel layout.
And what materials did you review in performing that work?
We had parking counts and site operations observations that Transpo conducted. We also reviewed the ITE parking manual and the Urban Land Institute shared parking manuals. We reviewed the proposed WoodSpring's site layout. As well as the existing property owners' information that they provided about occupancies and their operations. And then the 10W study from February 2025, their traffic impact analysis.
So just to clarify, you have reviewed 10W's February 2025 traffic impact analysis that's in Exhibit F8.
Yes.
And 10W's August 2026 supplemental traffic and parking analysis in Exhibit B6.
Yes.
Did your work include field observations at the business park? And if so, when did those observations occur?
Yes, we conducted observations on July 15th, 2026.
Do you hold the opinions in your memoranda to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty?
Yes.
Let's switch topics a little bit, dive a little bit deeper in. Did you personally prepare the July 29th, 2026 Transpo parking and access review in Exhibit A2?
Yes.
Could you please describe your principal findings of that review?
We found that the current site peak parking demand was 216 vehicles. That's based on our field counts. We also reviewed the hotel parking supply and found that they would provide 91 new parking spaces because there's 19 existing spaces on that hotel parcel. We looked at the parking demand for the hotel. We used the IT parking manual and the all suites land use, which was consistent with the February 2025 traffic study. And we found if we looked at the peak parking demand, the 85th percentile parking rate, that the hotel would have a parking demand of 111 vehicles, which is one more than the 110 spaces that would be on the hotel parcel. We also reviewed the design of the hotel parking, where they have most of their parking in the rear and a portion of the parking in the front on the main entrance. What we saw is in the cases where that parking would be full in the front, where people come in the main entrance, there may be some difficulty or confusion about finding that parking in the rear. And so that could lead to vehicles parking on the neighboring parcels for parking. We did see that maybe a parking management plan would be helpful to help with minimizing parking on the neighboring parcels. We also saw that there was no check-in and loading spaces identified on the site plan that we had reviewed. And then lastly, we observed that there is already some cut through for the credit union drive through. We observed during our observation period about 10 vehicles cutting through the drive through to circulate through the site. And then we observed 19 vehicles cutting through the hotel parcel, which is currently vacant, to circulate through the site, which means that they are possibly could be more vehicles cutting through the drive-thru when you develop the hotel site.
Did you and Drew Heckathorn, also from Transpo, author the August 19th, 2026 Transpo Memorandum in Exhibit A6 that reviews 10W supplemental traffic parking analysis?
Yes.
Can you describe the principal findings in that? In your supplemental review?
The supplemental analysis assumed that Ridgetop would be a primary access. Once guests check in, the memo said that after that, they would understand where their rear parking is and use Ridgetop as the main access. But it didn't acknowledge that Ridgetop was a right-in, right-out access, and that based on the traffic study, that study said that most of the traffic would come from Meyer, and that with the right-in, right-out movements of the ridgetop intersection, they would have difficulty accessing that. And most of, if the traffic would need to circulate through the site to access that rear parking.
Just to clarify, just because we're getting oriented on day one, Ridgetop Boulevard is the road north of the business park that runs east-west, and Myrie is the road to the east that runs north-south. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Please continue.
We also saw that 10W did collect parking data to understand the existing parking conditions. The transpo parking data was consistent with the 10W parking data, showing the peak parking demand on the site was similar in both of our findings. We see that the 10W supplemental calls out that the hotel would add 110 stalls. It doesn't acknowledge that there's 19 parking stalls on site, and that they actually would be adding 91 parking stalls. There was no parking management plan in that supplemental analysis. There was also a comparison to the retail and the hotel. And the study discusses that retail would generate more traffic than a hotel, which we don't dispute. But the comparison doesn't seem relevant because the parking layouts for the retail that was shown in the previous master plan is different than the hotel layout. And the layout for the retail didn't require traffic to circulate through the credit union parking to access it.
In your supplemental review, did you also make any findings regarding the ITE use categories that had been used in the process of 10W's analysis and Transpo's analysis?
Yes. So the February analysis had used the all suites hotel parking use. The supplemental analysis now used the limited service hotel use. The February study also collected trip generation data at specific WoodSpring hotels for the PM peak hour. But that wasn't done for the parking analysis.
And in your supplemental review, did you also make any observations or findings regarding the nature of hotel-generated trips that would circulate within the business park?
Can you repeat that question?
In your supplemental review, did you have any findings regarding hotel generated trips that would circulate around the credit union due to an extended stay nature?
Yes, in looking at the traffic study, we looked at the trip distribution from the traffic study, and it shows that about 80% of the trips in the AM peak hour, or over 80% in the AM and PM peak hour, would come from Meyer. And which means that in order to use Ridgetop, they would be coming the wrong direction, given that that driveway is a right in, right out. So we would find is that most trips would come through the main entrance. And if they were using that rear parking, would need to circulate through the credit union area.
Thank you. I want to kind of zoom out a little bit and talk kind of about 10W's original TIA, which is Exhibit F6. At a high level, what did this TIA and Exhibit F6 analyze?
It analyzed the off-site impacts of the proposed hotel and then the site access operations.
And just to clarify, do you dispute 10W's basic conclusion that the surrounding study intersections can accommodate the project at acceptable levels of service?
No, we don't dispute.
What transportation issues were outside the scope of 10W's original TIA?
It did not evaluate parking or the on-site circulation.
Did this original TIA analyze how parking demand would be distributed within the business park?
No.
Did it analyze whether the hotel could accommodate its parking demand on its own parcel?
No.
Did it analyze the practical route between the hotel entrance and the parking west of the building? Of the back?
No.
Did it analyze guest check-in loading or internal pedestrian and vehicle conflicts?
No.
Why are those issues different from external intersection level of service and roadway capacity? How are those different?
Those issues are related to the on-site operations, how the hotel would operate with the other uses on site. And the intersection LOS analysis that was done in the TIA is related to the off-site impacts of the hotel.
I am going to attempt to bring up an image from Exhibit A6. So this is page 8 of A6, and I'm going to try and share it now. Or Ms. Jones, are you able to bring it up?
I absolutely can, yeah.
Okay. That's probably going to be more efficient.
Page 8, you said?
Correct. Right there. Well, while that we're getting that finalized, could you describe the basic configuration of the hotel and its parking?
So the hotel's located approximately in the middle of the site, it has about one-third of the parking closest to Meyer and the remaining parking to the east or the west of the building, closest to the property line in the rear.
And just for the record's sake, I want to clarify that we're looking at page 4 of Exhibit A6. I think I had said earlier a different page. But looking at this image, can you tell us where the hotel lobby and primary entrance is located?
The primary entrance is located where we're pointing out the 36 hotel parking spaces off of Meyer.
Okay. And how many parking spaces are east of the hotel and how many are west?
There's 36 on the east and 74 on the west.
And approximately based on those numbers, what percentage of the hotel's parking is in the back of the building to the west?
67%.
From a parking and circulation standpoint, why is the location of those western spaces important?
The driveway to access those spaces is only on the north side. There isn't a circulation route east to west. That is on the hotel parcel. So in order to access those, circulation route is through the credit union parcel. and or from Ridgetop Boulevard, but Ridgetop Boulevard is a right-in, right-out, so it has restricted access.
And just still looking at the exhibit on page 4 of A6, the circulation route that you just described is that turquoise line that goes around the credit union building at the top of the image. Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
Is the parking in the west overflow parking, or does the project depend on it as a substantial part of its required parking supply?
It's not overflow parking. It's needed for to meet the parking needs of the hotel.
And what happens to the practical usefulness of the claimed 110 spaces parking supply if guests can't readily identify or reach those spaces on the back of the building?
Well, guests will want to park in the most convenient parking, as we often do as users. And so if they can't easily find the parking, then they'll park in parking that's located on the parcel north and south of the hotel.
We're still looking at this image. I think we're going to take it down pretty soon. But looking at the top of the image, what type of access is available from Ridgetop Boulevard?
It's a right in, right out access.
And what does right in, right out mean operationally?
It means that when drivers exit the site, they can't make a left turn to Ridgetop Boulevard. And to enter the site, drivers won't be able to make a left turn into the site from Ridgetop Boulevard. They can only make the right movements.
Does that mean it's the equivalent to the full access connection on Myrie Road?
No, it's different from that.
Taking that image. Thank you. So, can every guest approaching the site use the Ridgetop driveway to reach the western parking field?
No, guests would need to be traveling from the west along Ridgetop Boulevard to reach that driveway.
And can every vehicle leaving the western field use Ridgetop to travel in either direction?
No, guests would need to be traveling to the west.
Does 10W's supplemental analysis disclose anywhere that the Ridgetop Boulevard driveway is right in, right out only?
No.
Does 10W's February 2025 TIA acknowledge that the Ridgetop driveway is right in, right out only?
Yes.
So based on all this, if a guest enters from Myrie, checks in near the lobby, and then needs to park in the western field, what route is available?
They would circulate through the credit union parcel.
And that was the turquoise route that we saw
yes.
on the image we were looking at earlier. In your professional opinion, is that route direct and intuitive for an unfamiliar hotel guest?
No.
Why does unfamiliarity matter for an extended stay hotel guest arriving for the first time?
If they're unfamiliar with the site, they might use the drive-through to circulate, or they may park on the neighboring properties because they're unable to find the access to that rear parking.
And in your review of all the 10 documents, 10W documents, did you find any wayfinding analysis?
No.
Did 10W identify a parking management plan directing guests to the western lot?
No.
Did any of the 10W documents you reviewed model an increase in the number of vehicles circulating through the credit union parking lots?
No.
Did any of the 10W documents you reviewed analyze cues or conflicts associated with the credit union's drive-through area?
No.
One of 10W's assumptions is that check-in guests will generally use the east side, and then returning guests will generally use the west side. What evidence did 10W provide supporting that assumption?
None that I saw.
Did 10W identify signs, employee instructions, access controls, or any other mechanism that would cause guests to behave that way?
No.
In your professional judgment, is it logical to assume drivers will choose a less convenient parking lot over other parking without providing a plan on how to direct drivers there?
No. It's not logical.
Why does that this assumption about where the returning guests will park matter to 10W's conclusion that the parking arrangement will work?
It's being assumed that guests will comply with the rear parking location, but typically drivers like to park in the most convenient location closest to the front of buildings or where they're typically we would assume that that is where drivers park, most convenient location.
And is this just your personal opinion, or is this a pretty common understanding within the transportation analysis industry?
It's common in the transportation analysis that it's understood that drivers like to park in the most convenient spots.
So based on this understanding, absent a practical enforcement or management mechanism, where would guests be likely to park?
Well, first they'll park in the spaces in front of the hotel closest to the entrance. And then when that parking isn't available, absent finding the rear parking, they would likely park in the credit union or office parcel spaces to the north and south.
Another assumption that 10W states is that less than half of hotel-generated trips are expected to circulate around the credit union. In your review, did 10W provide an internal traffic assignment supporting that statement? Is there any evidence for that statement that they provided?
No.
What did 10W's original TIA show about the proportion of project traffic assigned to the Myrie Road driveway?
It's assumed that 85% of the AM peak hour and 82% of the PM peak hour hotel trips would be assumed to the Myrie driveway.
If roughly 85% of AM peak and 82% of PM peak hotel trips use the Myrie Road driveways, why would non-check-in trips still cross the credit union parcel?
Because the Ridgetop Boulevard is a right-in, right-out, so access is limited there. So given the proportion, there would be a large portion coming from Myrie Road and going through the credit union parcel.
And to the extent that people parking in the west lot enter or leave through Myrie, what route becomes important?
The route around the credit union becomes important.
And did 10W quantify those internal movements?
No.
During transpose field observations, did you observe vehicles using internal areas of the business park as cut-through routes?
Yes.
What did you observe around the credit union drive-through, and what were the maximum counts?
We observed vehicles cutting through the drive-through. Our counts showed up 10 vehicles during our observation period.
And this was separate from vehicles cutting through the vacant hotel parcel, correct?
Correct. We had observed 19 vehicles cutting through the vacant hotel parcel.
Okay. So 10 through the drive-through, 19 through the vacant lot.
Yes.
Why is the existing movement across the vacant hotel lot relevant to the proposed condition? And what happens to that route when the hotel is constructed, if it was constructed the way it's designed right now?
Well, once the hotel's constructed, that you'll no longer be able to cut through the vacant lot. So those vehicles would use a different route, which could potentially increase the number of vehicles cutting through the drive-through.
Based on your understanding of the hotel's layout and adding in unfamiliar drivers, would you expect that to exacerbate the existing cut-through behavior?
Yes. Drivers would add to vehicles circulating around the credit union, and as I mentioned, potentially, rather than going around the credit union, they may cut through the drive-through.
I want to switch a little bit from circulation issues and talk a little bit about parking. How did Transpose observe existing parking demand compare with 10W's observed existing parking demand?
They were approximately the same.
Were those two studies generally consistent as to the actual 2026 peak? And does that agreement give you confidence about your observed conditions?
Yes, they were consistent, and it does give confidence to both observations.
Does that agreement between the observations establish that the observed business condition represents full or stabilized occupancy of the existing business park?
No.
10W-based existing parking demand counts on counts collected March 31st through April 2nd, 2026. Do those counts reflect full operations of the business park?
No.
What was Kitsap Credit Union's operational status during 2026? And approximately how many fewer on-site employees were there than during full operations?
The credit union's undergoing a renovation, and there are 20 fewer staff on-site than they would typically have.
And what is the occupancy status of the doctor's clinic in the Cavalon 1 building, meaning the building farthest south? How many doctors are there currently, and how much room do they have for more?
They have about 15 doctors, and there's room for 7 more doctors.
And at roughly 20 patients per doctor per day, what does the unfilled clinic capacity mean for future parking demand?
Parking demand would likely increase.
Does 10W's supplemental analysis address the reduced credit union and doctor's office operations at the time of the counts?
No.
10W reports existing peak demand of 215 stalls, or 64% utilization. Would that figure be higher under full operations?
Yes.
Does your opinion about parking demand require you to identify the exact number of additional parking vehicles that full credit union and clinic occupancy would produce?
No.
What general conclusion do you draw from the underoccupied conditions in the business park?
Parking for the existing uses will likely be more in the future, and that means that there'll be less capacity for spillover from the hotel to be accommodated in those adjacent parcels.
Staying on the topic of parking, 10W describes the project as adding 110 parking spaces to the business park. Is that a net addition of 110 spaces?
No, there's 19 existing spaces on the hotel parcel. So their net increase is 91 spaces.
Could we please bring up the image from A6 again? So looking at the image on page 4 of exhibit A6 again, that shows the proposed parking layout, can you identify the 19 stalls that you're talking about?
The stalls are adjacent to Myrie and the parking field with 36. There's 19 stalls adjacent to Myrie that exist today.
And what happens to those existing spaces when the hotel is constructed?
Those would be part of the hotel parking on that parcel.
And just to clarify from earlier, factoring in these 19 existing ones, what is the net increase in parking supply attributable to the hotel?
91 spaces.
Okay. So is it fair to say that if an analysis starts with an existing inventory and simply adds 110 spaces, that it would overstate the post-project supply by 19 spaces?
Yes.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the ITE manual and how it relates to parking demand. Does the ITE parking generation manual have a category specifically for an economy extended stay hotel like the WoodSpring Suites?
No.
What are potentially relevant hotel categories that you considered, and of those, which one did you end up using in your studies?
There's a general hotel category, which is land use 310. There's all suites hotel, which is land use 311. There's also the limited service hotel, which is land use 312. And then based on the February 2025 TIA that 10W did, it identified as a reasonable proxy for the WoodSprings, the all suites use, and then it also had collected trip generation data for the PM peak hour. But our analysis, we used the all suites to be consistent with the 10W TIA.
And the data that you observed supported you relying on 10W?
Yes.
What ITE category did 10W use in its August 2026 supplemental analysis? And was that the same that it used in February 2025?
In the August analysis for the parking, it used the limited service hotel, which is land use 312. And that's different than what was used in the February 2025 TIA. As I mentioned, they used all suites, which is land use 311.
Is it industry practice to switch ITE categories when evaluating the access and impact and parking impacts of a project?
Typically, you would use the same land use category for trip generation and parking, given that ITE has a similar definition for those. And when we look at the analysis and switching between the two, it appears that maybe there isn't a good fit for an IT category for the WoodSpring Suites, which might indicate that collecting parking data similar to what was done for the PM peak hour trip generation would be better than using the IT information.
And so, is it fair to say that switching the ITE categories, and you mentioned the need to collect site-specific data, would affect your confidence in the consistency of the 10W analysis that you have seen?
Yes.
10W's table 1 states limited service hotels have no restaurant. Is that description accurate under the ITE zone definition? Does a LUC 312 description actually include a food pantry, complimentary breakfast, or a limited menu restaurant?
Yes.
And where can we find that?
It's in the description of the land use. It's also shown in attachment E of the 10W supplemental TIA.
Okay. Since the proposed hotel has no restaurant at all, does that make LUC 312 a better or worse fit for the project?
It suggests it might not be a good fit.
In situations like this, where the ITE categories are not a good fit for the proposed use, what's the typical approach for determining parking demand?
Typically, we'd collect site-specific data for that use.
What does the LUC 311 average weekday rate predict? What's its weekday 85th percentile rate and its average Saturday rate?
The weekday 85th percentile is 111 vehicles, and the Saturday is 110 vehicles. The average rate is 84 vehicles.
And how did those numbers, including what you just mentioned, compare with the 110 spaces provided on the hotel parcel, including the 19 that already exist?
The 85th percentile shows that there might be a one space deficiency, and that the 110 vehicles on Saturday shows that they're, the Saturday parking could fill up. So it shows that there may be periods where this parking becomes full.
And does that mean you're claiming the hotel will always have a parking deficit?
No, the information shows that on average, the parking supply would accommodate the hotel's demand.
But there could be periods when it's hard to find parking, right?
Yeah, there may be periods that it's difficult to find parking. When parking becomes full or even 85% or more full, guests may have difficulty searching and finding for a parking space, which means they might be inclined to park in the adjacent parcels where it might be easier to find a space.
Why is the difference between these two ITE categories important here?
Because the one projection is higher, and it shows that there potentially could be a spillover into the adjacent parcels.
What is the sixth edition of the ITE parking generation manual say about local conditions influencing parking demand? Does it caution that its blended data, quote, may not best reflect a particular local condition?
Yes, it says that local conditions and the area type can influence parking demand, and it cautions that the data potentially might not be representative of specific conditions.
For trip generation purposes, did 10W collect local data from existing Wet Spring Suites in the Puget Sound area? And if they did, over what period?
Yeah, they collected data in February and March of 2024 for the weekday PM peak hour, and they collected it at three different Wood Springs locations.
If 10W were considering the project unique enough to collect local trip generation data, wouldn't local parking demand data be equally warranted?
Yes. Typically, if you're collecting the trip generation data, local parking data would also be warranted.
Do you know why the 10W didn't collect local parking data?
No.
Would local peak parking demand data from comparable Wood Springs Suites hotels provide a more defensible project-specific basis for whether 110 spaces are adequate?
Yes.
Transpo's shared parking model projects aggregate peak demand to be below aggregate supply, correct?
Yes.
What does that result tell you, and what does it not tell you?
It says for the site as the business park as a whole, if the parking is shared, there's enough parking for all the proposed uses, including the hotel. It doesn't indicate kind of where specifically parking's needed, but divided between the uses, and if one use may need more parking in one area.
Why are spatial distribution and convenience important, even if the overall aggregate supply exceeds aggregate demand for parking in the business park?
Drivers like to park closest to where they're going on site, and they want to minimize the time they spend searching for parking that's available.
So does that mean a parking problem can occur in one part of the site while spaces remain empty elsewhere?
Yeah, there could be portions of the site that are more desirable for parking. And so you could have areas that are highly utilized and other areas that are underutilized because they're not as proximate to where users want to go.
And why is that particularly relevant to the west parking lot behind the hotel?
If drivers find that that west parking lot is less convenient, then they would be inclined to park on the adjacent parcels.
I want to talk a little bit about the comparison with the original retail use that was part of the original site plan for the business park. 10W compares the hotel's trip generation with the previously contemplated retail use. Do you dispute that the proposed hotel is expected to generate fewer external trips than the retail use?
No.
What question does that comparison answer, and what question does it not answer?
Well, it shows that the offsite impacts of the hotel will be less than what the retail had originally proposed. However, it doesn't answer the question of the onsite impacts because the two site plans are not directly comparable. The retail parking was designed differently from the hotel, where the retail does parking didn't require circulation on the adjacent through the adjacent parcels to access that parking.
And why didn't it require that access through adjacent parcels?
The retail building is set back from the property line, and it provides separated parking fields to the front and north of the building.
And just to clarify, when you say property line, you mean the west property line?
The west, yes.
Okay. So visualizing it, the proposed retail use had the building smushed all the way up against the west property line, and all of the parking would be to the east or north?
Yes.
Versus the proposed hotel, where most of the parking is the back of the building, and you have to negotiate between the front and the back.
Yes.
So what does this layout have effect-wise on the relationship between the hotel's entrance and most of its parking?
So the parking is isolated with only one access to the north from the rear, and the rear parking is disconnected from the front of the building. As we mentioned, the retail parking was connected.
if there's a project that generates fewer total external trips, can it still create a more difficult internal circulation pattern?
Yes.
I have some summary questions. We're almost to the end. So thanks for persevering. After reviewing 10W's supplemental analysis, were the principal circulation concerns that you identified in your July 26 memorandum resolved?
No.
What's your principal opinion regarding access to the west parking lot behind the building?
It requires as its primary circulation through the credit union, since most of the trips will be coming from Myrie, and Ridgetop Boulevard is right in, right out. The parking in the rear is less convenient than the parking in the front of the hotel. And so drivers would tend to potentially park on the neighboring parcels. And it also doesn't provide a parking management plan for ensuring that drivers park in the hotel parking.
And what's your principal opinion regarding 10W's parking supply calculation?
The increase in parking for the site is overstated by the 19 existing spaces.
What's your principal opinion regarding 10W's parking demand assumptions?
The IT rate appears to potentially not represent the WoodSpring suites, and collecting local data or hotel specific to the WoodSprings should be considered.
What should the applicant demonstrate before the proposed configuration is relied upon?
Confirm the parking demand for the hotel, consider full occupancy of the existing uses, confirm there's sufficient parking on site, demonstrate that the potential increases in conflict with circulation through the credit union parcel, and develop a parking management and wayfinding plan for the hotel parking.
Would a redesign necessarily require any particular design selected by Transpo, or is the objective to demonstrate direct, intuitive, safe access to the hotel parking without materially burdening neighboring operations?
Yeah, there's no particular design that's required. As you mentioned, the objective is to demonstrate there's safe and direct access to the hotel parking and not materially burden neighboring operations.
In your professional opinion, do the circulation and parking deficiencies represent probable significant adverse impacts that the record does not adequately address for purposes of a CEPA determination and the site development permit approval?
Well, parking is not required as a CEPA approval or as part of the CEPA checklist. However, it is part of the site development and permit approval, and the record does not show that the current layout can be managed such that it will adequately serve the hotel. On-site impacts to the neighbors related to circulation and safety aren't addressed for the purposes of CEPA and the site development permit, given that there's no management plan prepared.
I am at the end of my questions. Thank you so much for leading off for us, and I'll turn it over for a cross-examination.
Thank you. Is there any cross-examination?
Yes, and we actually, I think as you saw in the parking study, our client Anchor Health jointly hired Ms. Hertzen. So whether it be called direct or cross examination, we just have a couple wrap up questions here.
Okay, why don't we start with kind of testimony that we'd be more characterized, or questions that we'd be more characterized as part of the kind of the direct, and then we'll move to kind of something that would be more accurately considered cross, I guess. So
yeah, you may proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hertzen. Just a couple wrap-ups, because I know that you've been talking for a while. The first question is, under the county code, this is section 17490020C. That section of the code allows joint use of parking spaces if certain criteria are met, including a showing by the project proponent that, quote, their operations and parking needs do not overlap in point of time. Based on your observations and analysis, would there be any overlap in point of time between the proposed hotel's needs and the parking needs of the other businesses in the business park?
There are overlapping parking needs in point of time for the hotel and the business park. However, the hotel's peak parking demand would be overnight when the other businesses are closed.
Great. Thank you. All right. Shifting gears a little. So 10W's supplemental analysis, Exhibit B5, states that the parking reduction is justified for a few reasons, including, quote, the unusual nature of the project indicates that the type of hotel is different than a general hotel use that county code used to identify a parking rate. In your preparation of your parking study or supplemental review and review of 10W studies, was there anything that would indicate that an extended stay hotel would require fewer parking spaces than a standard shorter stay hotel doing due to some unusual nature?
No.
If you wanted to answer whether there was something unusual about the nature of an extended stay hotel as compared to a shorter stay hotel in regard to parking demand, how would you go about finding that data?
Typically, we would collect local or extended stay specific data.
Thank you. As mentioned in 10W's supplemental report, availability of public transit may also support a parking reduction. Did you see any evidence in the 10W studies that would support a finding that guests of this extended stay hotel would be likely to use public transit to go to and from the hotel?
No.
Is the availability and likely impact of public transit of parking demand something that is considered in the IT manual's counts?
Yeah, the mode splits that would be inherent with that data in the manual are counted for. So it would account for some level of transit use based on the sites that were studied for the IT.
Okay. And last question, if you wanted to study that further, the specific impact of public transit availability for a project, for this specific project, how would you go about doing that?
You'd need to talk more with the operator, kind of look at the transit in that area. You could also collect data from similar sites to understand what transit use is there and do some surveys at specific hotels with similar characteristics.
Great, thank you so much. That is the conclusion of our questions.
Okay, all right. Is there any cross-examination then?
For the applicant, I would have a few questions.
Okay.
Good
Mr. Carpenter, yeah, go ahead, Mr. Carpenter.
Oh, sorry, good morning, Ms. Hirstein.
Morning.
I wanted to ask first, you talked about vehicles cutting through, I think, the credit union drive-through and the hotel parcel. What do you, I just want to ask what you mean by that. Where are those vehicles coming from? Where are they going?
Vehicles enter the site and to circulate in areas through the site, they used the drive-through lanes instead of circulating around the credit union building.
Where were they entering the site from?
They were entering from, it could either, it was both from Ridgetop and Myrie.
And would the cars that were going, I guess, from, that had entered from Myrie and then went, so you're saying some of those went west through the credit union drive-through lanes?
Yes.
Did they then exit out the Ridgetop entrance?
I don't recall.
And the cars that were coming through from the north, so I guess going east through the drive-through lanes, were those then parking elsewhere on the site further to the south?
Yes.
And you also spoke about the 19 spaces that are currently on the hotel parcel, kind of on the east side adjacent to Myrie Road.
Yes.
Are there currently cars parking in those stalls based on your observations?
Yes.
And so are those credit union and office building users?
Yes.
And are there other credit union and or office building users also parking elsewhere on the property where the hotel will be constructed under current conditions?
No.
You did not observe any?
You mean on the grass area?
Yeah, or the dirt elsewhere on the site?
We didn't observe any, yeah.
Thank you. Are you aware whether the credit union and the office buildings have any parking management plans to keep their users from parking in those stalls on the hotel parcel?
Not that I'm aware of.
Shifting a bit, I think I heard your testimony. Did you say that the original TIA report, so Exhibit F8, prepared in February 2025 by 10W, that report did not acknowledge the right in, right out nature of the Ridgetop driveway? Was that your testimony?
No, I said it did.
Your testimony was that that was not specifically stated in the supplemental analysis?
Correct.
Thank you. And then I think the only other thing I wanted to ask about was just to understand a bit more about, I guess I can start. I will share my screen, and I'm on hopefully that is working. I am in, this is exhibit A2, I believe, your initial supplemental report. I'm on page 3 of that document, so PDF page 13 of the combined appellants exhibits. Are you seeing that?
Yes.
Could you explain, please, just a little bit more about the calibrated and uncalibrated models that you used to predict future parking demand?
Yes, this was done for the shared parking. What we did is we took the parking counts on site, we only had studied a limited period of 5 hours. We used the shared parking, calibrate, or used the counts we did to develop a shared parking model using the ULI, method. And we also used this model to project the parking that would occur when the site was fully occupied.
So is it a fair summary, I guess, that the calibration was increasing the number of stalls in demand for the existing uses over what you observed based on, I think, what you've described as kind of additional employees that may be on site or additional occupancy that there may be for the credit union and the office buildings in the future?
No, the calibration was to make sure that our shared parking model was reflected of the conditions we observed in July to make sure that the rates that we were using for parking were reflective of that. And then there was a second piece to to project what would happen when the credit union was fully occupied and the office, or, well, we actually didn't do the office in this, the medical office, because we didn't know about that when we did this work. We only found out about it at the end. I think we have a sentence in here that says that it's not reflected.
I see. And thank you. Thank you for that clarification. And then you also added on top of that predicted parking demand for the hotel.
Correct.
Where did you get that prediction of demand for the hotel?
The prediction of the demand was based on the understanding of the all suites and using the shared parking rates.
What do you mean by the shared parking rates?
The ULI, the industry hotel parking rates.
I see. And so then you added that rate for your predicted demand for the hotel and then the calibrated model for the other two uses. And is that total what gets to what's described on page 5 of your report as 257 parked vehicles?
Yes.
And that's the prediction.
Well, that's the, I don't think the 257 is with the,
oh, I'm sorry.
I think that's just the, just without the hotel. And
thank
then the next, it's the 318.
Yep.
Yes.
Thank you. And so the 318 is the 257 figure with the total predicted for the hotel added on top of that?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. And is this model that you use to get to 318, would you consider that to be a reliable and industry standard model?
Yes.
Great. That is all my questions. Thank you.
All right. So any redirect?
It's me.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yes, of course, Mr. Walker. Go ahead.
Hi, Ms. Herbstein. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
This is Neil Walker. I'm the attorney on behalf of Kitsap County. Please remind me, when you said you were, what you reviewed to prepare your analysis and then, of course, to prepare for this morning's testimony, what did you review from the previous permitting? And by that, I'm specifically referring to the land use permitting in the 2004-2005 range.
We reviewed the parking supply information that we were provided. We also looked at the CCRs.
Did you happen to review a report authored by a Michael Wenick, spelled W-E-N-K? He provided, he's a civil engineer who provided some parking information to the county for purposes of the Highland Business Park traffic generation studies.
Not that I recall.
I'm still going to ask to refer to an exhibit in the county's batch of documents. This is specifically C-22. And I'll represent to the group that this consists of a 5-page document, page 1 being a fax transmittal from Mr. Wenick, I'm probably mispronouncing that, to county officials dated January 11th, 2005 with attachments. My offers C-22, and then it'll ask to publish a page or two of it.
So you're asking for C-22 to be admitted at this time?
Yes.
That, okay. Any objection to that? C-22 is admitted.
And I'll ask Madam Clerk for assistance getting to the third page of C-22.
This one?
Please. Are you able to see that?
Yes.
And does that look like anything you may have reviewed in preparation, well, in your analysis or in preparing for today's testimony?
No.
I may switch to the fourth page of this document. Could you please switch to the fourth? Yes, thank you. All right, this we're now looking at page four. The pages are numbered at the very bottom in the footer.
And I'm sorry, what was the earlier page? Can you repeat that again, what we just looked at?
We were just looking at page, there's zeros, page 003.
Okay.
And
okay.
Moving to page 004.
Okay.
Again, all in C22. This looks, I'll represent to you that this was a representation of what the buildings may look like at the time of this initial planning stage. Have you looked at this kind of, are you familiar with this particular site drawing?
I've seen a site plan like this. I don't think it wasn't from this study specifically, but
okay.
I've seen the site plan that was originally proposed.
Well, your testimony included describing the prior a parking layout that was envisioned for a possible retail building, which is, I'll represent to you, is the structure near the top of this page, which is labeled sideways, anchor retail. Is this similar to what you had previously viewed in terms of portraying what was anticipated for the parking for that particular use of what is now the hotel site property?
Yes, it's similar.
So I'm a visual person, and so the more drawings one puts in front of me, the better. And I'm just trying to understand what's sort of the change in the parking that was envisioned at the time of the SDAP, at the time of the previous land use review. And is it, without being exact, is this approximately what was represented as the parking layout at the time of the previous land use review and what you have seen in making your comparisons?
This is what I've seen.
Isn't it true that the parking stalls on it, this can go away now, thank you.
Oh.
Isn't it true that the parking stalls on adjacent parcels can be marked as to the specific users who are allowed?
Yes.
So, for instance, for the credit union property, their stalls on their property could be used marked Kitsap Credit Union Parking, and or the parcel to the south could be marked as Catalan Place Parking?
Yes.
And isn't it correct that wayfinding signage could address what you've described as a non-intuitive circulation of users of the hotel?
Yes.
Do you agree that the hotel property is in proximity to public transit?
Yes.
Does your analysis account for the hotel's proximity to the local hospital campus?
I'm unclear what you mean by that.
I'll try to rephrase. Are you aware of the local hospital campus in Silverdale?
Yes.
And isn't it true that the local hospital campus is just a few blocks uphill of the hotel site?
Yes.
Do you have an understanding of whether the hotel owners would intend that their guests would include visitors to the hospital campus?
I don't know.
Would you agree with the premise that the number of parking spaces or the demand for parking spaces on the hotel site could be lessened by use of shuttles or by use of other shared transportation that would connect hotel guests with the hospital? In other words, not everyone necessarily needs a car if they're a hotel guest and a hospital visitor.
It could be.
Does Does your analysis account for who are the likely populations of guests of the proposed hotel?
No.
Okay, thank you. Those are all of my questions.
Okay. Assume no further direct. Cross. We can go back. Any redirect?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Ms. Hedstein, just to clarify, the image that you did review regarding the previous business park site plan, was that Exhibit B15?
That's the 10W supplemental.
That.
We can pull it up again if it would help the witness.
I think B15. Let me grab it. My notes are. I guess we can hold off on that. Looking at the image from C22 that Mr. Wachter brought up, is this consistent with the images that you have reviewed, where the proposed retail building was along the west property line, and the parking was to the east and the north, which is a little confusing looking at this image because north is
yes.
the bottom of the
yeah.
image.
Yeah, north okay. is down. Yes.
And this is C22, is that right?
Correct. Yep. Okay. C22, page 4. You mentioned on cross, you answered that spaces can be marked for particular users in a situation like that. In any of the materials that you reviewed related to the applications, was there any indication that the spaces would be marked?
No.
Was there anything in any of the materials that you reviewed that indicate 10W was considering wayfinding measures or signage?
No.
In your experience, even if wayfinding could reduce some friction, does it resolve conflicts?
No.
Is there anything that you reviewed in the documents you reviewed that discussed the proximity of a hotel or a hospital? Excuse me. Hopefully it discussed hotels, but hospital.
No.
Did you state earlier that the ITE approximation models consider mode share when they're coming up with their aggregate numbers?
Yes.
I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Looks like that's all then for redirect. Any recross?
None for me. Thank you.
Okay.
No, thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your testimony this morning, Ms. Hertzstein. So I think, let's see. Should we move to the next witness? Sorry, we are at 12:08. So, and we're not probably going to break to at least 12:30, right? Or 1. Ms. Jones, is that's about right? Okay.
We could come after 1:15. You want to take an hour break?
I don't want to take more, definitely not more than an hour. We could start. How long would you anticipate on the next witness?
30 minutes.
Let's go ahead and go do that. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense.
Okay. All right. Who is the next witness then? And by the way, if I do forget to call out any specifically for direct or cross or anything, do speak up. So a lot of parties here.
The appellants would like to call Kelly Latex here.
Okay. Ms. Letexiou, do I have the pronunciation there? Letexiou?
Letexier.
Okay. Ms. Letexier, do we have you on board? There we go. Okay. Ms. Letexier, can you hear me? You'll need to unmute yourself.
I'm unmuted.
Sorry about it. I thought they'd point to me online. Okay. All right. Good morning. Thank you for that. You did introduce yourself earlier, so apologies. If you can state your name once more for the record.
Kelly Letexier.
And you swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
I do.
Thank you.
Ms. Letexia, we just had you state your name, but could you state your title and role at Kitsap Credit Union?
Yes, I am the Senior Vice President of Corporate Initiatives.
And how long have you worked for the credit union?
I have worked for credit union since 1994.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm having a little trouble hearing Ms. Letexia here. I don't know if it's possible to move a microphone closer.
Let's see. Either speaking up, I assume this is a live mic right here. Is that the only one? Maybe I wonder if you switch spots. Yeah, that might help.
Better?
I think so. Thanks.
And just speak up again if. Any other issues? Yeah.
Thank you.
This is a text here. What are your responsibilities? Oh, actually, I think we got interrupted. How long have you been in your current role?
I've been in my current role for a little over a year and a half.
And
but I've overseen facilities since 2011.
What are your responsibilities in your role?
I oversee all the administrative services functions as well as the facilities at an executive level and then other corporate initiatives as they come up.
Are you familiar with the case? I'm going to refer to the credit union occasionally as KCU. Are you familiar with the KCU branch located at 2041 Northwest Myrie Road?
Yes, I am.
How did you become familiar with that branch's day-to-day operations, its parking, and its site access?
In my current role, obviously, the facility is managing that facility and what goes into it. But prior to that, I oversaw the branch network and all of the other locations.
Do you regularly visit the site, review operational reports, or receive information from branch staff and members about parking and access conditions?
Yes, I regularly visit the branch and talk to branch management about, share concerns about the traffic.
And do you ever hear any member complaints about parking?
Yes, I do.
I want to talk a little bit about the operations of the branch. Could you please bring up page 3 of Exhibit B10? So we have an image, page 3 from Exhibit B10. Could you please identify the branch on this image?
Yes, on the right-hand side of the screen, where the cursor is, move a little bit right there, where she is circling with the dollar sign on the top.
Where it says Kitsap Credit.
Right, where it says Kitsap Credit.
Could you describe the facility, kind of its size and the services it offers?
Yes. So it's a 3-story office building. The center story or the second floor is our actual retail branch that does all banking services, including safe deposit boxes. The top floor and the third floor currently are undergoing renovations, but those will become office locations, and the bottom floor will be offices with conference room space.
And what are the branch's hours of operation, including the lobby, the drive-through, and the ATM?
The branch hours are Monday through Thursday from 9 to 5. The Friday hours are 9 to 6, Saturday 9 to 1. And then we have ATMs, and those are 24/7, 365.
Approximately how many employees work at the branch and where do they park?
Okay, approximately, obviously, 10 to 11 are scheduled every day, and they park on, let's see, that would be the west side, so back behind what we call behind the building.
And still looking at the image from page 3, exhibit B10, that the parking lot that you're talking about being the back of the building is at the top above the building labeled Kids at Credit Union?
That is correct.
Okay. This next one's a data question. Approximately how many members or customers visit the branch on a typical weekday?
I'm going to refer to just some notes because I didn't memorize those numbers. So our ATM walk-up, so that is where you're parking and walking up to the ATM, there is roughly 952 of those a week. The drive-up, which is driving up to the ATM, is 1,085 of those a week. In lobby, those are where you're getting out of your car, you're walking in and doing business, 2,128 a week. And then drive-through, that is where you're going through the drive-through lanes, dealing with an actual teller, that is 610 a week. And these are just monetary transactions. We don't keep track of safe deposit box, people coming in for fraud, other research type questions.
So these numbers underestimate the total number of people arriving.
Absolutely.
Are there identifiable busy periods during a typical day?
There are a couple different cycles. So our morning, first thing in the morning, lunch hours are always busy. That is also influenced whether or not it is a holiday weekend and then also influenced by a payday week.
Presumably holiday weekends and paydays have heavier volume?
They're busy all day long.
What is a typical member visit like? Is it a short transaction, a long transaction?
And as I said earlier, they can vary. A basic pay receive transaction, you go in, you do your transaction, you come out. That branch is so busy, however, you could wait in line 10 to 15 minutes to do a basic teller transaction. Other transactions such as safe deposit boxes, fraud, business accounts, deeper things can go up to 2 hours.
Has the branch recently undergone or is it still undergoing renovation?
Yes.
During any recent renovation period, was the branch operating at less than normal or anticipated staffing or member volume?
The branch has been unaffected.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
The branch has been unaffected.
Oh, right, right. Thank you.
It's the other two book, the top four and third four.
And just to clarify for those not in the credit union industry, when you say the word member, mm-hmm. is that the equivalent of a bank customer?
It is, yes.
As the renovation concludes, do you expect member and employee activity and the related parking demand at the branch to increase toward normal or anticipated levels?
Yes, we do anticipate it to increase as we will be adding at least another 20 staff to that location. All in, we could have between 30 to 50 people in there depending on conference room utilization.
We still have the image from page 3 of exhibit B10 up. Can you describe how the branch's drive-through lanes are laid out and how members use them?
So I guess it would be the south of the building where the closest to the dirt lot area. On the end of that building there are 3 drive-up lanes. So one is a drive-up with a teller window, and just ahead of that is an ATM, so the member can use either the drive-up teller or the ATM. The 2 other lanes are what we call tube lanes, and they are serviced by tubes that run up and over into each one of those lanes.
We can take that down. We're going to come back.
Okay.
Are the drive-through lanes designed for low-speed transactions?
Yes.
Do vehicles queue while they're waiting?
Yes.
Is there an ATM or drive-up facility in that same area?
Yes. The first lane is both.
Do members access it on foot as well as by vehicle?
The ATM in the front of the building is a walk-up. However, if there's parking, if that one's being used, they walk around to the drive-up and they will use the drive-up lane.
So it's fair to say there's pedestrian activity, members, employees, in and around the drive-through area?
Yes.
Was the drive-through area designed or intended to serve as a through route or shortcut for traffic passing to other parts of the business park?
No, not to my knowledge.
In your experience, what happens to the drive-through's function when vehicles that aren't conducting banking business go through the lanes?
It's dangerous. When you're coming through those lanes, one, there's the poles, but two, people stop, they do the transaction, and they are coming from a stop to moving forward. It's usually staggered just because of the way the drive-ups work. If somebody is coming through that, they're not looking. And so it creates cars kind of getting bottlenecked as you're asking.
Could you describe the parking that currently serves the branch, meaning where members park versus employees?
So referring back to that other picture in the what I call the back of the building, but I think that's the west side, is where we instruct all of our employees to park back there. Because we are so member traffic heavy in the front, we need that parking. That is where we have our members park. And occasionally they will park on that closest to the Myrie entrance in that extra overflow. But they're all up there and they flip through.
Approximately how many parking spaces does the branch rely on for its members and staff?
Approximately 45.
In your experience, are there already times when parking near the branch entrance is fully used or hard to find?
Yes, all the time.
And by all the time, do you mean literally all the time or regularly?
Very regularly.
Very regularly. The KCU members expect to find convenient parking close to the branch entrance?
One of our values is convenient access. And so, yes, when they come to do a monetary transaction, especially or safe deposit box, if they expect to find a parking spot right by the building.
And do those expectations have anything to do with what they're there to do?
Absolutely. If they're there to get something in or out of a safe deposit box, it usually has value. A lot of our business members have a large amount of cash on them, and actually so do some of our members, and they want to be able to have a straight shot in, straight shot out.
Based on what you've observed or what you've been told, are members generally willing to park in a remote area and walk across multiple parking areas to conduct a banking transaction?
No, they are not.
Have KCU members or staff expressed concerns or complained about a lack of convenient parking near the branch being available?
Yes, they have.
And what effect does the availability or unavailability of convenient parking have on members' willingness to use the branch?
If they don't have parking, other than also complaining, they will not do business there. If they don't feel safe, they can't go in. And so it's actually an impact to our business if they can't do the business that they want to do.
Are you aware of some of the parking spaces near the branch on the adjacent parcel, the vacant one that the hotel is proposed for? Are there spaces there currently used by branch members or staff?
Are you referring to the dirt lot mostly?
The dirt lot or the spaces along Myrie, the existing spaces?
The dirt lot, no. But as I said, the several spaces that's closest to the Myrie entrance that is by us, they will use some overflow there, but that's as far as they will typically go.
I want to switch a little bit to talk about circulation and this idea of cutting through that we've kind of talked about. Based on your knowledge of the site, how do vehicles currently move between the credit union parcel, the office and medical buildings farther south of the vacant lot and the vacant lot itself?
Mostly I see them coming in off of Myrie and going back and back and forth between the businesses. If they do come through the backside, which is up Ridgetop, through the lot and then down to other businesses.
And by lot, do you mean the credit union's lot or the vacant?
The vacant dirt lot.
Okay. So I just want to clarify what we're talking about. Can we bring page 3 of Exhibit B10 back up? So when we're talking about the cutting through the vacant lot, I'm looking at this image and I see a large brown area just to the left of the credit union building. Mm-hmm. Is that where we're talking about people cutting through?
Yes, the traffic pattern, the dirt shows it.
And that's separate from the people cutting through the drive-through.
That is correct.
Okay. And it's also separate from people going around the building to the north.
That is correct.
Okay. If, assuming the hotel were to be built, it extends very far north to the property line, and it would fill in where that brown area is, at least partly. If the hotel building eliminates people's ability to cut through the vacant parcel, where would you expect them to cut through?
I would expect them probably to cut through our drive-up lanes as the easiest access and point to get from the west to the east side of the building.
I'm going to switch back to parking. Are you familiar with the proposed hotel? Have you?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And is it your understanding that most of the hotel's parking is going to be on the back of the hotel building, but would be reached by driving through the credit union's parcel?
Yes.
Based on your experience with how members and visitors behave, if hotel guests couldn't find the rear lot easily, where would you expect them to look for parking?
I would expect them to look for parking at the closest point to the entrance. So I would expect along that Myrie Road or in the front of the credit union or in front of the other building, the Northwest Title, closest to the entrance.
And what would be your concerns if hotel guests or employees parked in the spaces closest to the credit union?
His perspective, it's access. Those when we are busy first thing in the morning, members will not find a spot. I would say it's that answers the question before. If they can't do business with us, they will not go there.
You mentioned that some of the spaces that members and employees for the branch use are on the hotel parcel right now. What's your understanding of what happens to those spaces if the hotel were to be built as designed right now?
They would go away or be limited availability.
And summing up all of this, what would the operational effect be from losing convenient parking for the branch?
As I've said, the ability to do business conveniently, I've shared the numbers. It is a very high volume area. If people cannot go and access things conveniently, safely, they won't go there or they will take their business elsewhere.
Relatedly, what are your concerns as a KCU representative about hotel traffic being routed around the branch building and past the drive through to reach the western lot proposed behind the hotel building.
It's I had a lot of concerns. I actually experienced it myself recently, wanting to see it for myself, and coming up through the back, or I guess the west side to the east, I almost got a head-on collision. And then when I was able to stop, regroup, member went around me, I came into the parking lot and almost got backed into. So that was one firsthand account of an experience that I've been told happens regularly. So the additional volume in an already congested area is a real safety concern for me in the credit union.
And just because we still have the image from page 3 of V10 up, the area that you're talking about having this near miss, that would be to the right of the credit building. I think that's north.
Correct.
Okay. Around the top, which is it your understanding that's how hotel guests would access the rear parking lot of the proposed hotel?
That is my understanding.
Okay. Do you have any safety concerns about additional drivers that aren't familiar with the business park entering the drive-through and ATM area while members are conducting transactions either in their cars or on foot?
Yes. As I've said, that is a very congested area already just by the nature of the business that they're there to do. Adding unfamiliar drivers, adding additional volume, adding people that are not familiar with just what the drive-up area is, it adds a safety issue to both pedestrians and vehicles.
We heard earlier some discussion about parking management measures, and I wanted to ask you if you have had experience using signs to control or restrict parking at this branch or other KCU facilities?
Yes, and it doesn't work. Our good example is we do have another location that we have signs that clearly say member use only, and people drive in, they get out, they go to the ferry, or they go to wherever they want to go. It's the most convenient for them, and if they're pressed for time, they find a vacant spot. Signage is just a suggestion.
So in your experience, is towing vehicles, trying to enforce these signs, an effective means of enforcing parking restrictions?
Absolutely not.
What kind of operational or safety concerns does the need for towing raise in your experience?
In our experience, towing companies, one, it's a low priority to tow cars that are just in the wrong area. But second, and was more concerning for us, is the tow companies began requiring personal identification of the staff member who was towing vehicles. And our facilities team came to us and said, we're not going to do that. We don't feel safe. It becomes a matter of record or public record, and we're not going to do it. And so we made a business decision that we would not put them in that situation.
Would a voluntary sign-based or reserve space arrangement that depends on hotel guests vacating spaces before the branch opens be, in your view, a reliable solution?
I think I just said no. Signs are not a reliable solution.
Has anyone from the applicant team or the county asked the credit union to agree to a shared parking or cross-parcel parking arrangement?
Not to my knowledge.
Have they asked to allow parking enforcement measures on the branch property?
Not to my knowledge.
Would KCU support hotel guests or employees using parking spaces on the credit parcel to use those parking spaces, or would the credit union support bearing the burden of signs and monitoring and towing
to manage hotel overflow?
No, I'm not going to add staffing. Excuse me.
You don't currently have staff that could
not
be in charge of that.
No.
Have you had a chance to look at the documents that 10W created related to the project?
Yes.
To your knowledge, did 10W ever ask KCU about its member behavior, convenient parking expectations, or the anticipated post-renovation occupancy? Did they ever reach out to get any of that information from you?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Based on everything that you've observed and know about the operation of the branch and the project, what's your view regarding whether the proposed hotel will cause or worsen parking and vehicle access problems in the business park?
I think I'll refer to what I've been talking about. It is already a highly trafficked area. Our lot alone is significant as far as complaints, as far as fender benders, as far as just through volume. And adding more volume on top of that, especially drivers that are not going to a specific location that they know drive up or going into the branch, creates to me a significant concern for the safety of our members and our employees.
Thank you for taking the time to testify. That's all I have for direct.
Okay, and is there further direct from the other appellant?
No, none.
Is that a no?
I'm sorry. Yes, no, none. I am.
Oh, okay. All right. No, that's fine. So then, is there any cross-examination?
Just a few questions for the applicant. Good, I guess, afternoon now, Ms. Latex here. David Cartman for the applicant. I think I heard that your testimony was saying that the anticipated additional 20 staff for the location post-renovation, those are not staff who worked there previously. Is that right?
That is correct.
So you will be adding 20 staff members beyond the number of employees who worked at the credit union prior to the renovations began?
That is correct. The second floor is the only floor currently occupied, and we will be putting staff in 1 and 3.
And do you anticipate relying on parking stalls on the hotel or office building properties after the renovations are complete?
I would think to a minimal.
Is it your understanding that credit union employees have the legal right to park in those spots?
I'm not a legal person. I just am saying what I observe.
Fair. I think that's all my questions. Thanks very much.
Okay. Mr. Walker?
Ms. Latexier, how many lanes were, or do you know how many lanes of drive-through, I'm not saying this very well, how many lanes were contemplated for the original drive-through of the bank when it was at the time of its original designing?
They've been 3 lanes the entire time. What those lanes do have just changed. So we've moved an ATM to a different spot and created a 2-lane, but it's always been 3.
Do you know whether the bank, again, at the time of original land use approvals, was approved for those drive-through lanes to be on the north side of the KCU building?
I don't know.
Either the questioner or yourself stated that the drive-through lanes would be very close to the hotel structure. Do you know the distance between that would be expected between the hotel structure and at nearest edge of the drive-through lane and or overhang?
I do not know, no.
I guess to put a point to this, would you expect space for a driver to be able to drive between the drive-through lanes and the hotel? based on your understanding of where the hotel's to be placed.
I would expect there would be a thoroughfare through there, yes.
Do you know one way or another?
From what I've seen on the plans, it does not appear that there is.
So when you say you would expect it, you're saying that's what you would want, but you don't know what the plan is.
Correct.
Prior to the renovation that is undergoing, what was the use of the second and third floors of the KCU building?
So the second isn't changing. That's always been a branch. Previously, the first floor was our real estate department operations. And then the third floor was two tenants. There was at one point a Navy a leasing company and then a IT company. And when the Navy leasing company left, I believe a psychiatrist's office went in there, and then the IT firm stayed, and now both are vacant.
Since the time the building was originally constructed, have there been additions to it, or the whether an expansion of the footprint or the addition of any floors?
No.
Are the renovations currently underway going to result in any additional square footage in the KCU building?
No.
But you expect that after the renovations are complete, there will be 20 additional users, in other words, sorry, 20 additional employees who will come to the KCU building every day, or at least during weekdays. Is that right?
Correct.
Prior to these renovations, what was the peak of employees who would be present at the KCU building at any given time? Certainly appreciate what you were saying about customers who come to the bank with cash in hand. Mm-hmm. Isn't it true that the number of cash carrying customers has declined in recent years given the changes in electronic banking?
You'd be surprised at how much cash people use. So they have changed, but not enough to where we're considering a cashless environment.
Okay, those are all my questions.
Okay. Any redirect?
You mentioned adding 20 staff when the remodel is done. Mm-hmm. Would you expect all of those 20 people to be present every day?
No, we work in a hybrid environment, so it would fluctuate, and that's our kind of intent, is to make sure that we can accommodate that flow of people coming in and out, just like we wouldn't do a meeting on a payday.
So based on how your employees operate now, the fact that you would be adding 20 employees wouldn't mean you need 20 additional parking spaces every single day.
Absolutely.
And would you anticipate that you would have sufficient parking for the employees that do come in?
That's our plan, yes.
Actually, one more. Bringing up page 4. Actually, sorry, I brought it up here. A6.
Should
share screen so everyone online is able to see it as well.
And do you mind zooming in to the to maybe even a little further? Zooming in a little further. Yeah, right there. Ms. Latex here, Mr. Wechter asked you about the possibility of a travel lane between the hotel property as posed or proposed and this. Looking at this image, do you see an additional place for vehicles to go through south of the existing drive-through lanes? No further questions. Thank you.
All right. Any further across?
Not for me.
Okay. All right, Ms. Letexier, thank you for your testimony this morning. So we are at 12:45. Probably now would be a good lunch break time. I'm thinking, I guess, the other question would be how long of a lunch? How much time do we need for the room transition? I guess I'd turn to you, Ms. Jones.
Definitely 30 minutes.
Okay.
Minimum.
Okay. All right. How long a break do the parties like for, make sure you can eat a little something?
Less the better, but
okay.
I don't know.
Yeah. Excuse me, sorry, to contextualize the discussion, it would be very helpful to know, I think, given that Mr. Smith is not going to be testifying today, if I could ask what we're anticipating for the remaining.
Oh, yeah, that's a good question.
And timing from the appellants and perhaps the county if we get there, just with an eye to seeing if our witnesses may end up testifying today after all.
Yeah, thoughts on that from the appellants?
We are going to ask Ms. Ryland to testify. Mm-hmm. That's it.
And that's it. Okay. Yeah. And then, let's see. And so, would there be any other additional witnesses today, then, from the county, or I guess Mr. Walker, I'd turn to you on that one.
And if I could interject too, so the Anchor Health appellants are planning to do direct of two witnesses today.
Okay. Okay. So maybe. Three then possibly. We probably would not get to, is there anyone planning from the county today? I don't know if we'll fit them in if that with three. We might. It's actually, they're going fairly quickly, so they might.
Well, we might call Mr. Gurney to testify today, as well as Robert Hankins, who is a project engineer. Obviously, we're playing it by ear.
Okay. So we actually then probably would not, Mr. Cartman, get to the applicants until tomorrow. So, yeah, I think.
Understood. Thank you.
Yeah. So.
I mean, we'll be ready if we need to, but that's helpful. I appreciate it.
Yeah. No. It's good to have a better idea on the schedule. So, okay. Any other questions before we adjourn for lunch?
How long will the lunch be?
Right. Yes. That was before I did. Yeah. Okay. So I'm thinking maybe 1:25. Is that okay?
Should we say 1:30?
We'll say that. Yeah.
David wants a round number. Yep.
All right. What you got to watch out for me? I'm telling you. 1:30 it is. Thank you all. And I get for those of you who signed on online, probably best to. Actually, Ms. Jones, because are you going to have to...
I'll leave the webinar running. I'll stop the recording, but I'll leave the webinar running, so you shouldn't need to, you won't get kicked off. If you do choose to leave, you can certainly rejoin, and it'll still be going, so.
But it might be easier just to avoid any technical issues if you stay, but it, yeah. Probably that's the easiest, but okay. That answered that question. And it remains the same link for all day, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. All right. I think that's that. We will reconvene at 1:30. We are adjourned until then. Thank you all.